Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning. So would you mind explaining to us, in 2008, I understand the law was changed to abolish the need to corroborate evidence, and this has sort of led to a bit of an increase in the likelihood for sexual assault cases to be brought to the court. Would you mind explaining to us how these changes worked?
Yeah, actually, the change came a lot earlier than 2008. But there used to be a requirement that no complaint in a sexual case could be accepted or uphold a guilty verdict unless there was someone else independent of that person who could corroborate, that is, confirm most of the allegations. So it was a very stern requirement. And quite correctly, that got abolished 30 years ago or so. The current law in Victoria is from 2008. But that doesn't mean that otherwise the rule in the rule that usually applies, which is proof beyond reasonable doubt, has changed. That's still the law.
So this would be sort of one of the dissenting things, I suppose you might say, certain figures in the media are picking up with their arguments that they still believe Pell is in some way innocent.
Yeah, well, look, you know, views can still differ on this. What matters, and what's the crucial thing from the court case, is that Pell has lost his last chance to settle, almost his last chance to settle the matter legally. He has one more ruse available, but it's a very hard one. But otherwise, apart from that, the law will now regard him as a convicted child abuser, and he will serve his time in prison. The debate isn't about the legal position, subject to what the High Court says. It's about what everyone believes either way, and everyone can make up their own mind whether they accept that he's guilty or not.
Most certainly. In terms of coming to the decision, the judges involved in this case, or indeed in other cases of this ilk, is there a particular method they feel on using? Is there a particular method that is used to kind of corroborate a witness's reliability or somebody making an allegation's reliability?
So there are no rules like that anymore. That's why they got rid of the corroboration requirement. So every case is its own case. This case is, in my view, at one end of the spectrum in terms of being almost entirely dependent on just one person. It all comes down to whether you believe that person or not, and in particular whether what they say is strong enough to overcome the other evidence in the case. Most cases that have come before the criminal courts today aren't like that. They're usually that one person, and not corroboration, not this strong technical requirement that someone independent backs up the case, but just other evidence that supports the case. So it might be things the accused has said, it might be a series of things that the complainant has said to other people. It could be just that people saw them at the time and saw that they knew each other or had gone into a room or whatever. There's nothing like that in this case. So that's why this is at one end and why there's so much talk about it just turning on one person's word.
So I know it sounds slightly faintly absurd perhaps to say, but there's no way when these cases are taken on a case-by-case precedent to actually establish precedent in the sense of, well, we've seen similar cases before, that sort of biases the outcome in some way?
Look, I think everyone takes their experience into account. So the one reason we have juries is so that they bring their common experience into account. They've seen people, they've seen situations where someone said something and it's turned out true or not true. So they take that into account. The judges, and this is why we have judges involved at all as well, they take into account their experience in criminal cases. So they've seen cases like this, and that's played into their decisions.
And in terms of the judge's decision, much has been made in, again, certain segments of the media about one dissenting judge's opinion, one of the three dissenting in the opinion of the other two, in the decision, the legal decision of the other two. Does this give any grounds for George Pell and his legal team's legal argument going forward in appealing perhaps to the High Court?
Look, as a matter of law, dissents don't matter. It's the majority that rules. But Pell, who has a very difficult road ahead of him, has to convince the High Court of two things: that it's worth taking on the case and that the Court of Appeal majority got the decision wrong. In both cases, I don't think they'll say this outright, but the message they'll try to put across is, if one senior judge had doubt in this case and strongly disagreed with the other two judges, then it's at least possible that the majority got it wrong. So I think that's how it matters. But at the end of the day, there's no predicting how the High Court will deal with this case. They don't have to take it. And if they took it, they will decide on their own. They won't care what the three judges below said.
Mm. Well, Jeremy, thank you very much. Do appreciate your insight into this one this morning. Obviously, on the outside looking in, it can be a little bit daunting. Do appreciate your time.